Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome back to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest Doom Patrol-related podcast, where every episode we talk all about our favorite superhero team, the Doom Patrol.
I'm Paul, also known as Flanger, Hixie, things like that. You can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks, and we also have a Gmail account, which is waitingfordoom@gmail.com, and we are on Facebook. And if you want to find a blog which has posts that support our episodes, it's at mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. My Greatest Adventure 80, of course, is the first appearance of the Doom Patrol. That's why it's called that. Mm-hmm. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com in some combination between the three.
Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarv. You can also find on Twitter our sentient show account, Wilfred, who is at WFDPod. And as always, we are proudly brought to you by Comicosity.com.
Yeah, and what's happening in Comicosity right now is it's Jack Kirby's birthday this week. Woo. So if he was alive today, he would be 100. So he'd be bloody old, but we'd all be bloody impressed.
Yes.
Yes, they've got a bit of a celebration going, so they have an article which is Hail to the King, Jack Kirby's Best Marvel Characters, and it's a sort of 10-1 of Marvel characters. But it's all laid out, so you don't have to click between the two like you do on bloody Newsarama. you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. It's just it's an easy experience on your eyes. And, yes, and you know, there's so much going on for Jack Kirby's birthday. It's fantastic. My Twitter is lit up like a Kirby Christmas tree at the moment.
Mm, it's been very cool to see all the Kirby love today. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very
cool. It's good to see the man getting his due.
Finally, after all this time.
Finally. I'm so sure it's a great comfort to him now that he's no longer with us. Anyway.
Anyway. What have you been up to, Paul, since we were last on air?
Oh, it's been a bloody age, hasn't it? We've had some really past weather, very cold. You're in Queensland, so it's probably not cold where you are.
It's been a bit cold, yeah. Yeah, it's got down to like 10, 12 degrees a couple of nights in a row. Go on, shut me up now. Go on.
We got to -4. We had snow for a few hours on Sunday.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's all over the place. Anyway, what have I been doing? I went and saw Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets.
Oh, now I know you were excited for that when you saw the preview a while back.
Yeah,
you lived up to your expectations.
Oh, it was amazing for 5 minutes. And then it was okay, and then it was going on a bit, and then it finally ended. If you are a hardcore sci-fi at the cinema man, I would get out there and see it, or a woman, or a robot, or a sentient Twitter account. I'd get out there and see it. I mean, visually, it's very interesting and good, and you know. But basically, the opening segment is the best part of the movie,
right?
And that's probably worth seeing. but then it just sort of. The film dwindles from that point.
Oh,
but it's got that Luc Besson quirkiness in that there's bits in there that would never make it into an American sci-fi film. You know, it's like, well, this is weird and ridiculous and funny and, you know, a bit farcical. And yeah, but it disappointed me somewhat, but I did not regret giving them my money for a worthy effort. Yeah, so that's how I felt about it. There are many other things I did, Mike, but none of them are as interesting. So let's move on to you.
what have I been up to? I'm slowly but surely getting through the comics pile, a bit of Detective Comics, bit of Justice League. What else? The finale of Unfollow. I finally finished the last
four or five
issues of that. I really enjoyed that series.
Gee, it wrapped up fast, didn't it?
Didn't it just? Yeah. It was breakneck speed, some of those final issues. and the final few issues of Shudder from Image Comics, another series I really enjoyed that's just, well, I think it wrapped up a couple of months ago, but because I'm behind in everything, I only got round to it now. And you know what's really annoying? When you finish a series and your first thought is, I'm going to go back and binge read the entire thing. Really frustrating to discover that you're missing issues.
So, did you not notice that you did not have them as you went through?
Well, because it had been so long since I'd gone near the earlier issues I own, I was just like, yeah, I kind of remember what's going on. Yeah, I'll just finish them. So I finished the final issue of Shudder. I was like, oh man, that's good. I've got to go back and reread it all. I'm missing three freaking issues. Seriously? Out of a 30-issue run.
Whoa.
So that was a bit of a bummer. Are they
easy to locate, or is this the Australian thing where it's bloody impossible to find a back issue?
I'm fairly confident I'll be able to track them down without too much difficulty. So maybe I should start up a segment to help to get the listeners to help me. I've got to find a song that mentions the word Shudder somehow. And then Unfollow, because I'm missing issues of Unfollow as well, I discovered. So it's ridiculous. What else have I been up to? Traveled down to Newcastle a week before last with my darling Kylie. She was a finalist in a writing competition for the Hunter Valley Writers' Centre. And got her first short story published in an anthology that raises funds for grief counselling in that local area there.
Whoa. I mean, that's like five amazing things in one sentence there, right?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So she was quite chuffed and, you know, made some good contacts there, and hopefully that will spur her on in her, you know, budding writing career, which I know she's keen to get more into. So, yeah, and Newcastle is an interesting little town. It was quite cold. And, yeah, it was I'm just going to say, it felt like a big country town that was bordering on a ghost town.
It's like after the rapture.
Yeah. Yeah, we were having a wander around town, and it must have been like, I don't know, 6-7 at night. It was on a Friday or Saturday night, and hardly anything was open. It's like, okay,
yeah,
this is strange. So, but yeah, it was strange. Cool to see somewhere new and different that I hadn't been before. So I can't complain. So it's always good to get out and have a bit of a trip away from home. So yeah, that's pretty much what's been going on with me.
Awesome. Hey, Mike, did you know that we got a new iTunes review?
What?
Yeah, I kid you not. Now, this we're doing the little, you know, do us an iTunes review, we'll send you a postcard. And someone has taken us up on that. And this is a review from Andy Macken, or Macken, I'm sorry if I'm saying it wrong, from Denmark. And he gave it 5 stars, which is good. That's a good amount of stars to get.
Yes.
I think that's the maximum amount of stars. That's not out of 10 stars. So 5 stars, 100% stars. anyway, this is what he said. I'm just crapping on now. He said, a best Doom Patrol podcast. I agree with that. He said, this podcast is an excellent example of the genre. Well-researched, always well-presented, thoughtfully, humorously, and with an obvious love and respect for the subject. Highly recommended.
Woo! Thanks, Andy. Much appreciated.
Yeah, so we will be sending you a Doom Patrol postcard, a Waiting for Doom Doom Patrol postcard with exclusive art by my daughter. And it's better than it sounds.
It is. It really is.
Yeah, so if anyone else would like to leave us an iTunes review, we still, how many Australian iTunes reviews we got? Let me count them. None. None. Right. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's peaking at none at the moment. So if there's anyone in Australia who knows how to use iTunes, leave us a review. That'd be fantastic. If you're listening.
Yeah, see, I know how to use iTunes, but it's a bit dodgy to give my own show a review, I think.
Oh, there's many nights I've sat here and almost done it.
But, but we're above that. We're
I would feel bad. I mean, the guilt of it and, you know, the false value of it.
Yeah,
just,
And burden. Then, you know, you'd get the postcard in the mail and you'd feel so guilty you'd have to mail it back to yourself.
I would. That would make me sad and weird, yes.
A little bit.
Anyway,
now that we're getting sillier, how about we go and have a look at what's going down on Durrington Way?
Sure. So, it's that exciting time where we have a new solicitation of a new issue of the Doom Patrol, so we know what is going to come. We have a little, few sentences describing what it is, and it is Doom Patrol issue number 11, which will be shipping on the 22nd of November in 2017.
At this stage.
At this stage. Oh, golly.
Sorry.
And it is written by Gerard Way, as always, art by Nick Derrington, cover by Nick Derrington, variant cover by Tom Fowler. Ooh, looking forward to that. And here is the description. Oh, let's go through everything. So, US price, $3.99. It's a color comic. It's trim sizes comic, according to this site. Page count of 32 pages. Anyway, this is what it says. Doom Patrol fights...
I was just going to ask, what's the rating on it?
It's for mature readers.
But that won't stop us.
That won't stop us. Never gets old.
Sorry for the interruption. Continue, Paul.
Okay, this is the description. Doom Patrol fights Dada. And someone becomes a mama. How did life and death become so intertwined? It's Robot Man versus a classic foe as Casey and Terry take us into a whole new territory we've never seen before. But could this newness also just be a whole lot of nothing? Oh, I so want to read this. I want to know who the classic foe is. I want to know who becomes a mama. I want to see Dada again.
Okay, who are you thinking is the classic foe?
I just have a mental block. I can't get past Mr. 103.
Really?
The man of 103 elements. Or
come on.
118 elements.
Surely it's General Mortis.
Oh, I hope not. I'd love to see Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man. Yeah, I want to see some of those one-offs. Maybe it's Giacomo.
The triumphant return of Giacomo. Wow.
The cross-dressing dwarf. Yeah, that would be amazing.
Only been 50-something years, but yeah.
Yeah, but and they're confirming they're fighting Dada.
What
of Dada?
Look, it has to be Mr. Nobody coming back, yeah. Surely.
Maybe there's two. Maybe it's both. I mean, it's... Maybe it's just assumed that Mr. Nobody will be with the Brotherhood of Dada, and there's another classic foe. Maybe I'm just too optimistic about this.
Oh, look, can't fault you for that.
That's
an exciting piece of information there that we're getting an old school villain back, and the word Dada. You know, that's always good to see mentioned with the Doom Patrol.
Yeah, but let's talk the cover. It has Terry Nunn in a leotard with a white leotard with black patterns on it, and she is doing jazz hands, and just on a white background, and it's so good. It's such a fantastic cover.
Oh yeah,
looks like a straight out of a Pixar movie or something. It's amazing.
Oh yeah, good call.
Yeah, love it.
Can you imagine a Pixar film of the Doom Patrol? Oh,
gosh, that would be incredible.
That would be, oh my God, sorry. Just got a bit too excited there.
The best way to do the Doom Patrol.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, golly. Well, that's our show. is that ticking that I hear?
That ticking can only be the Doom Clock. So, yes, as we look upon the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that it's only been 5 weeks since we had a Doom Patrol book in our hot hands. Issue 7 of Volume 6, which we covered back in episode 101, and saw the team reunite with the Chief, Niles Calder, as he led them into a bizarre adventure into the Scantiverse. That was some cool fun.
That was scantastic.
And yes, issue 8 is on its way, but it's been rescheduled and it's now releasing on September 6th, which is just 1 week away.
Mother data.
Yeah, it's a bit of a bummer. I don't quite get why they pushed back A at all, B a week.
Yeah,
we'll never know. Anyway, this week in Doom Patrol history, with thanks to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, we learned that going on sale for a mere 12 cents on September 2nd in 1965, with a cover date of November of that year, was issue 99 of Doom Patrol Volume 1 by Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiani. This issue featured two stories, the first being The Deadly Sting of the Bugman, which showed Larry Traynor becoming jealous of the negative being and refusing to use his powers, leading to the team falling prey to the robotic insects of the Bugman and needing to be rescued by the chief and his action chair.
Oh, remember that so well.
Oh.
What app did we cover that in, Mike?
That would have been episode 34.
Whoa.
Way back in October of 2015.
When I was in my 20s and...
The second story in this issue was titled The Beast Boy and featured Gar Logan in his very first appearance ever. And the town had young Gar being a nuisance teenager trashing Doom Patrol headquarters, being a bit of a nuisance, but still the patrol allowed him to join them on a mission and he proves his worth to them by helping them battle a gang of criminals.
And I think he was called Craig in his first appearance, if I remember correctly.
I think that's correct, yeah. There was a bit of a whoopsie-do about his name.
And that was when he was purple.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Wacky days. So, yes, we covered both issue 99 and 100 of Volume 1 all the way back in episode 34 from October of 2015. So you can check that episode out for more details. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Sweet.
Xenozoic Xenophiles,
a fan podcast devoted to the comic series Xenozoic Tales.
It's a post-apocalyptic adventure series filled with Cadillacs and dinosaurs.
I'm Ruth.
And I'm Darren.
We hope you'll join us as we discuss the stories, characters, and art in this excellent comic series from creator, writer, and artist Mark Schultz.
Xenozoic Xenophiles is available at podbean.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.
And find us at xenozoicxenophiles.com.
Okay, and now it's the fantastic part of the show where we explain something about the Doom Patrol in the segment that we call Doomsplaining, coincidentally. Anyway, so today we're looking at two issues of the Doom Patrol from Volume 3, which is back in 2002.
Ooh.
Yeah, and we are coming back to Volume 3. We haven't talked about Volume 3 for ages, have we?
Not since Episode 81, which was our first episode for 2017. It's been a little while. Yeah,
you're amazing, Mike. I don't know when we listened to it. Like, we talked about it last, and you have it there, right in front of you, at your fingertips. You're just
I'm just a guy doing what he can. You know,
you are the Oracle of Delphi. Anyway, so Mike, you're going to take us through Doom Patrol number 7 from the third volume of the Doom Patrol. Take it away.
Yes. So published by DC Comics. With a cover date of June 2002, but going on sale, according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, on April 3rd of that year, for a mere $2.50, with 36 pages? That can't be right.
What?
That's insane.
Wow.
One moment, please. I'm testing my eyeballs. Yeah, 36 pages. Wow.
Hang on, I've got to take my socks off. Yeah.
So... edited by Andrew Helfer, written by John R. Cootey, art by Tan Eng Huet. Bob Lappin was the letterer, and David Stewart was the colorist. And this cover, also by Tan Eng Huet, it's a great cover with the word Memento in large letters, and what can only be a fairly not great looking head of Robot Man.
It's like half. It's missing the jaw.
It's missing the jaw. It's
and the body.
Yeah, take a drink before you even open the issues.
Take a huge drink.
Huge drink.
Take a drink that you shook first.
So yes, the issue's titled "O Captain, My Captain." But before we dive into it, we'll do a quick recap because, yeah, as we were just saying, we last looked at Volume 3 back in Episode 81. From January of 2017, and in that episode we covered issues 5 and 6, and in them we saw the newly formed Doom Patrol throwing off the shackles of Jost Enterprises, only to come face to face with the new Doom Patrol, which consisted of Metamorpho, Elongated Man, Dr. Light, and Beast Boy. And so after the inevitable hero fight, they decided to team up, and they got to the business of taking on the actual bad guys, a group of Chinese demons led by Uber Demon Now Yurt. I still love saying that.
Now Yurt.
Their victory was short-lived, however, after a comment by Metamorpho about how the previous patrol had been killed in action ended up causing Robot Man to suddenly vanish into thin air. And this left the new patrol members, Fever, Kid Slick, Freak, and Negative Man, to get their act together and figure out exactly what happened to poor old Cliff. And so this issue opens with the team in their Doom van, Beast Boy Gar Logan's behind the wheel, and he's accompanied by Shailene, a.k.a. Fever, or Hot Hands 2, Vic, a.k.a. Kid Slick, and Ava, a.k.a. Freak. They're parked out the front of some buildings in a small town on the south, and they're waiting for Ted, a.k.a. Negative Man, or Negative Ted, or Fast Forward, to return to them after he's questioned some locals about any robot sightings they may have had in the last few years. Apparently he's on interview detail because he speaks the language, and he's triumphantly returning to the team with some good news. But before we hear what that good news is, we cut away to St. Aloysius Hospital, where Thea Jost is arguing with a Dr. Freedag about releasing one of the patients there into Thea's care. But despite the doctor's morally and ethically based stand, Jost soon gets out his checkbook and offers to take care of the hospital's $2 million debt in order to clear things up. Right. Good old Jost. We then cut back to the patrol as they begin to ascend a forested mountain with Beast Boy transformed into a donkey carrying bags of equipment for the team. It's a great scene, that. We soon learn that the team is travelling to the site where the former patrol apparently died. They soon come across a large crater, and Ted tells the team to set up camp. And before long, they've got their metal detectors out, and eventually they get a hit. Beast Boy then turns into an aardvark to dig up the ground as fast as possible. But we have another cutaway scene, and elsewhere, a woman in a farmhouse has received a phone call and answers some questions that confirm she would be the legal guardian of someone who's not really her daughter by blood. When the phone conversation ends, the woman's sister asks who called, to which the woman replies, "It was some gentleman who wants to give me $1 million. But then we cut away again to the current DPHQ, the former Bruno's nightclub, where the team have returned with the item they dug up, which turns out to be Robot Man's damaged head. They argue over how or whether they even should bring him back, or if Cliff would want to come back at all. Beast Boy comments that he has some money stashed away that he can contribute to the rebuilding, and he's got an idea about how they can do it. And the next thing you know, there's an ad in the local paper. In all caps, it reads, "Major superhero team taking bids on robotics reconstruction project." And there's a long line of weird-looking super science types queuing up to apply for the job. When one of the applicants gets tired of waiting, he storms to the front of the queue and pulls a giant gun on Shailene, which causes Gar to transform into a gigantic, ferocious-looking gorilla And, of course, chaos breaks out and all the scientists run for their lives. Well, all of them except for one. And that man turns out to be Colin Denko, the funny little man who we last saw unsuccessfully trying to enter a DARPA conference back in issue 6 of this volume, which, again, we covered in episode 81. Before we learn more about Colin Denko's plans, we are briefly shown a funeral. Man, the number of cutaways in this issue. And at the funeral, the casket of someone called Leonard is being lowered into the ground. After the mourners leave the cemetery, a strange pale man with jagged facial markings appears, along with a harp-playing demon. This man comments that the music is so beautiful, like any angel's voice, and he asks the demon, who we learn is named Semyaza, to keep playing. Creepy. Anyway... Back at DBHQ, we learn that Dr. Zviad Kolodenko is an expert in neuroreactive prosthetics, and he's from Georgia. It's at this point that we learn that Negative Ted has a fairly limited worldview, as he's convinced that Kolodenko is a Russian, based on his accent. Oh, God.
He says, you're not born near Atlanta. Yeah. I don't think it's that Georgia.
It's not that Georgia, no. Despite this awkward moment, the Doctor shows the team slides of his work, initially a large exoframe for the US military, but then Soviet military intelligence got him to rework his ideas into something smaller and more combat-ready. So with the help of neurosurgeons, he was able to construct a bodysuit that responded directly to neurotransmissions. And because Robot Man is actually a brain in a robot shell, the same principle should apply. And sure enough, early the next morning, Kolodenko wakes the entire team up, dragging them all downstairs, where he reveals to them an all-new, all-different Robot Man. Ta-da!
Whoa!
What do you think of this one, Paul?
Oh, I love this. Oh, it's so good to come back to this run. Oh. Yeah. I mean, John Arcudi, he's a really good writer. He created The Mask with Doug Monkey. He did Major Bummer. He's worked with Mike Mignola on BPRD books and stuff. But this is the favourite thing of mine that he's ever written. It's I love this run so much. I just love the characterisation of the team. Like, you've got Ted being like a full-on southern redneck, you know, getting information out of people in a bar at the start. Yeah, the rest of the team all in squabbling in a van, this crappy old combi out the front. You know, the whole... Oh, everything about this issue is fantastic. St. Aloysius, it reminds me as a child when I came to terms with the spelling of Aloysius, and I think I was reading something and said Aloysius. And I think my mum explained that, no, that's Aloysius.
Yeah.
It's very helpful. And even
like that.
Yeah, and it's just hilarious that Beast Boy is turned into a donkey to carry everything up the hill for them as they climb.
That's one of my favourite scenes in this issue, where Ted's kind of taking on more of a leadership role, and you know, Donkey Beast Boy says, "Oh yeah, that's right. Negative Man is the emotional anchor of your team. That's clear thinking." And Shailene and Vic turn around and like yell at Beast Boy, telling him to shut up. And I just think that was a really nice display that they're kind of bonding more. They're, you know, becoming more of their own team and finally getting along a bit more, even though Ted still gets on everyone's nerves. So,
and it's from the conflict and the you know, the uncertainty that they're all endured, that, you know, they're trying to stick together as a team. They had Robot Man, and then Robot Man just vanished, you know, evaporated into mist in front of them. They're trying to work it out and, you know, have a purpose. I just love this team. I love Tang and Hewitt's body language all through, you know, that he puts on all the characters. You got, you know, people shrugging and stunned and
Even the way he draws when Kolodenko's walking through the streets when the newspaper hits him in the face and there's a giant flap. That just looks so cool. See, there's not a bad page in this.
Dr. Kolodenko, in my mind, he's like a sad version of Dr. Nick from The Simpsons.
I like it. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the sort of accent I put on him. But there's so, like, fast forward, Ted, or Negative Man 2, as they call him, he can see 60 seconds in the future, and there's a bit where they're using the the metal detector, and he says, just dig there. And he's going, but, and Beast Boy says, I didn't hear the metal detector go off. And he said, I did a minute from now.
Yeah. I also really liked Beast Boy's revelation as to where his money came from in order to pay for the services of whichever super scientist they're going to end up hiring. And it turns out that he was involved in a live-action remake of The Jungle Book where he played all the talking animals. And they just got color correction done in post-production. Because it was cheaper than getting trained animals. And I was just like, that's brilliant. That's so funny.
Oh, dear. And yes, the parade of mad scientists who come in, who line up to for the job.
Oh, it's almost a shame that there was no one in the lineup that I really recognized. They just seemed to be an odd cast of weirdos and that. But it would have been cool to see, I don't know, like a cameo of a scientist from the DCU in there.
I like the guy who has a giant worm in this giant tank. actually, it's two guys. They're like twin brothers. But, yeah. Because it's got this giant worm.
Yeah. Yeah. And Charlene's kind of like literally keeping them at arm's length, saying, you know, we really need somebody who works in robotics, but if we ever do need someone who has giant worms, we know who to call.
No one wants giant worms.
No, thank you. But yeah, it's a really cool issue. As you said, it's great to be back looking at this run. Because, it's been a while. We've been Pollack stuff in Volume 2. So, and what do you think of the all-new, all-different Robot Man reveal on the last page?
Yeah, he's got a really industrial-looking body. It's very... big.
It
seems to be in gold tones with steel colored chest and waist.
Yeah, it almost to me looks like a Transformer toy come to life. It looks like his limbs would somehow collapse in on that giant black and silver, you know, body there and turn into something else. He just looks massive now.
Yeah, he's massive. He looks super bulky and heavy. But just the colouring, you know it's Robot Man. He's got that sort of gold coppery colour.
Yeah.
Yeah, much more expressive eyes. Still has a sort of steam shovel jawline, yeah. Yeah. Oh, so good. So good.
It's so good. So let's keep on with the goodness, Paul. Tell us all about issue 8.
Issue 8, yes. So issue 8, it came out on July 2002, according to the cover, but according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, it came out on the 1st of May 2002. $2.50 comic, edited by Andrew Helfer, and it's titled But When I Wake, written by John Arcudi, art by Tang N. Hewitt, lettered by Bob Lappin, and coloured by Dave Stewart. And it has a fetching cover by Tang N. Hewitt of the team with the new Robot Man sort of ensnared by tentacles with this big sort of monster, which I will describe later, sort of leaning over them menacingly.
Spooky.
So, where it starts is Cliff Steele, newly resurrected, stands mouth agape, surrounded by his pajama-clad teammates, who he does not know at all. Fever sniffles sadly, sad that he doesn't know them at all. But Ted impatiently explains the deal. Oh, for how many freaking times I got to tell you, this ain't the same Robot Man we knew. That was a fake, and this dude's real. Cliff suddenly recognizes Gar Logan, or Beast Boy. Good to have you back, Cliff. And Gar then introduces the rest of the team and Dr. Colin Denko. Eventually, Cliff sits down with them, staring at the picture of the team with the fake Robot Man and hearing the story of how Thayer Jost, using the other Cliff to license the Doom Patrol name for his corporate in-house hero team, formed the team, and then they fell out with him. Vic and Ted start to bicker because they're talking for more than 10 seconds, and when Vic says, shut up, Negative Man, Cliff learns about the code name the cynical Ted has earned himself. Cliff is struggling with the story and he doesn't recall any of them. He doesn't even know what happened in the Smoky Mountains where his body was found, where his head was found, more the point. Meanwhile, at St. Aloysius Hospital, a taxi arrives carrying the elderly woman who Thayajos contacted in the previous issue. Thaya meets her and carries her luggage inside, promising that they have lots to talk about. The Doom Patrol are soon heading into town to see Gar off, his time with the team cut short due to his need to keep active in Hollywood work. The bald man who we saw with the harp, the chalky complexion, finally dressed in a fur-lined coat, cravat and top hat, stops Ava and greets her. She seems very disturbed by the encounter, but Ted pushes his arm around her protectively and drags her away. Gar says farewell to the team and Cliff in particular, but Ted cuts him off. He said, "Okay, driver, this one's ready to go. Hackety yackety yack. Damn, thought that chatterbox would never leave." With the Doom Posse all back in Bruno's nightclub, Shailene asks who took the rope she set aside in the basement. She was planning to build up a hammock with it. Ava heads into her room, downcast and teary. What's the point? Things change, but they're no better. Just different. What's the point? What's the point of any of it? She says. In the next room, Cliff is lying awake, wondering what he's doing there. Maybe he should have left with Gar. There were plenty of roles for robots in Hollywood. Suddenly, the adjoining wall dents inward from a massive impact on the other side. Cliff emerges from his room bewildered, and then he gets completely skittled by a humanoid monster in the hall that looks like it's been assembled out of purple flatworms. It knocks him out of the way and runs off. Checking to see if she is okay, Cliff looks into Ava's room where it came from and sees a noose hanging from the ceiling. And there on the floor is Ava's body curled up, but she is desiccated like a husk or a mummy. The rest of the team start grappling with the monster as it knocks them aside. Dr. Colin Denko comes out into the hall, oblivious to the chaos. "Everybody, good news for me!" He takes in the mayhem for a moment as the team grapple with the monster. "Oh, it's better I come back later."
Cliff, you have to do Colin Denko's voice from now on all the time.
Cliff hands him Ava's shriveled body. "Hold this!" The monster rages wildly around the headquarters and the team are ready to attack, but Cliff holds them back. He has worked out what's actually happening here and brings them all into the cool room. They shut the door and Cliff gets Dr. Colin Denko to lay Ava's body on the floor. They open the door and the monster comes in and gently, reverently kneels in front of Ava and then snakes around and into her, squirming back into her body. The creature merges with her, making her whole. Her vitality returns. She breathes and she sits up. The team takes stock of the situation, are freaked out. Ava seems to have a parasitic relationship with this creature. It lives inside her and keeps her alive. Ava seems back to normal and denies ever being suicidal and angrily denies the need to see a psychiatrist. Dr. Colin Denko gets to finally share his news. He has used his robotic expertise to get a university job lined up. Ted is soon confronting Cliff about his favourite topic, who, named Ted, is the best choice for team leader. But Cliff says, "I don't know if I even want to be on this team." Exasperated, Ted tells him that they need him to get the right to the team name back because there's some old lady claims that she can give Thayajos the rights instead. Ted waves a newspaper at Cliff with the story. Cliff grabs it out of his hand, stunned by what he sees. "What's the quickest route back to town?" Cliff says. And he is soon pounding down the highway on metal feet, making divots in the tarmac as he goes. He rushes into St. Aloysius Hospital, just ahead of a camera crew. They are there to cover Joss' announcement. Thaya Joss also arrives, shocked to find Cliff is already on site ahead of him. He runs up the stairs to catch up to him, but Cliff is already in the hospital room, staring at the tiny body in the bed. There, lying with a respirator over her face and monitoring equipment all around her, is Dorothy, the ape-faced girl.
Wow.
There's something I really love about this issue right off the bat, and that is the fact that this all the action with the monster happens in the middle of the night, so you see the entire Doom Patrol in their pajamas. You never saw that with the Justice League, did you?
Nah. Funny, showing off professionals. Yeah. Another great issue in this run.
Yeah.
Because it's the first we've ever really seen much of Ava's powers or abilities or, you know, what her deal is.
Yeah, she's been able to send out tendrils and things and grab stuff. And
now we know why.
And we have seen her looking weird before.
Mm. But yeah, she's got this big beastie living inside of her, literally.
Yeah. So I mean, Ava isn't suicidal throughout this series because this, you know, reading this on her own, it makes it look like a really horrific, you know, teen trying to commit suicide and what's going on. But the hint is it's that chalky guy that they bumped into in town who's triggered this in Ava. So, because remember in the last issue we saw him, he was at the funeral of some kid.
Yep.
Yeah, just taking in the grief and enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether this was deliberate or not. Well, it must be in a way, but when he bows down to Ava, when he meets her on the street, he has like a trident on his I don't know whether it's tattooed or just drawn there, but it's right on top of his skull, and it's a bit creepy.
Yeah,
I can't wait to learn more about that chap.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll see him again. And it's such an interesting dynamic in these two issues that Gar, who's always like the youngest person on the Teen Titans, is like one of the older people here.
Mm.
And he's the more experienced and more mature person compared to the rest of the team.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, and I mean, it was fantastic that he's in the title, but I don't feel sad that he's leaving because, you know, I feel like the team have their own dynamic that's really good, and it's, you know, he helped them get Cliff back, but, you know, now the team get back to being their own team.
I agree completely. I think he didn't overstay his welcome. It was great when he showed up with the other new Doom Patrol and kind of, you know, as you said, helped these guys out. But, yeah, I think it was well-timed for him to leave in this issue and let this new team, continue on their own.
Yeah. And I don't think I can describe this monster that came out of Ava adequately. So everybody just head to mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com.
Thanks, Doug.
when Doug gets the posts up. And I just love that Tang and Hewitt just fills the background with these strange like symbols that make it sound like there's otherworldly music that you don't understand happening everywhere. And, you know, and the sound effects are so visceral and large and prominent.
Yeah, it's so again. It's another great issue in this run, and there's not a bad page in either of these.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And when the monster merges back with Ava, it really is revolting looking.
Yeah, it's a bit because it kind of stops what it's doing right in front of her, and Cliff lifts up Ava's body, and then the monster kind of reaches down and puts a handful of tendrils underneath her, lifting her up, and then it kind of puts itself into her body through her mouth and kind of merges with her in a really gross way. Yeah.
And it's such a twist on the whole, you know, in any situation in a horror film, this would be, you know, a horrible situation for someone to, you know, this would be their demise or the moment where the thing gets them. But here it's restoring her to life.
Mm. Yeah. So. Well, it kind of explains her code name now too.
Yeah. Mm. But this, I mean, in the background of these two issues, there's been a real growing brother-sister relationship between Ted and Ava. Like, Ted's very protective of her throughout both these issues. You know, he's reassuring her on the climb up the Smoky Mountains, and, you know, when the weirdo stops them in town, you know, Ted's the one who wants to protect her and pull her away.
Yeah. I think as much as he big notes himself, he might actually be kind of okay as a team leader in a way.
Yeah.
Despite all the grief that everyone else gives him. Sometimes, which is deserved. But yeah, it's. I love how the team is growing as this book moves along. It's really cool to see.
Yeah. And fantastic colors throughout by Dave Stewart. Oh, such a good comic.
Mm-hmm. Now we have to talk about that last page.
Yeah.
With Dorothy.
So haven't seen Dorothy at this point since the Rachel Pollack run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is also the same hospital where the how would we call it, the fake robot man, the one who vanished, he sort of instantly appeared in this hospital room at one point, just yes. standing there, and then vanished again. So, you know, there's definitely some connection between the fake robot man and Dorothy.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I want to say more, but I kind of guess we can't, because there's stuff that happens later in, which we're still yet to get to in Volume 2, that leads us to this point.
Yeah.
That explains why she's in this hospital. So
yeah. I mean, if this was a brand new comic, we would be speculating about what's the deal is here, but because we've already read it, the next issue, we know what the deal is, and we don't really want to ruin it for anyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I would love for this run to be collected and put out in trade.
I'm still surprised it hasn't been, you know?
Yeah. It's not even on Comixology yet, though. I'm getting the feeling that it's going to be there sooner or later, because they seem to be collecting a lot of Doom Patrol stuff right now. But
it is a new hotness, yeah.
It is a new hotness, but this is such a good run. It's so different, and you know, even though it's got a whole new cast of new characters, it's so Doom Patrol-y.
Mm-hmm. It's got the humor, it's got the bizarre, it's got the friendly yet bickering teammates. It's really good.
And Arcudi, you know, he never really went back to the well much with all the old villains. He actually created new ones.
Which was something I was really glad to see in this run, that it was all new challenges for this new team to face. I think that's one of the best things about this series as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and such a great diverse cast, and you know, and they all have that Doom Patrol thing of, you know, they're all, you know, they're all sort of suffering in some way. They're dysfunctional, you know, like Fever has Hot Hands powers, but you know, she can't control them. You know, she's just as likely to burn, you know, her boyfriend as, you know, fight crimes.
Whoops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good. So good.
I'm so glad we got back to this volume. It'll be good to get to it, back to it again at a later time, because we've got to build up some of the suspense.
Next issue is a big one and has real ramifications for you know, some characters in Volume 2. So
It was so good reading these. You're right. I wish more people could get these or this run. You know,
yeah.
It's a shame it's not collected.
Yeah. Ooh, love it. Love it. Okay. Doomsplained.
Well, doomsplained. Well and truly.
And now it's time for the mailbag O'Doom, which is the part of the show where we look at the mail that we've received from the question of the week that we ask every episode. And this time we asked, who are your favourite fictional siblings? So, firstly, we heard from Fractures, at Fractures, Fracknarok, as he's known on Twitter at the moment. And he said, Grayson, Drake and Damien. So, you know, not literal siblings, but in the Batman family, they sort of form a sibling set. I'll allow it.
Very good of you, sir. Yeah. We then heard from Ange, at Dr. Ange 70 on Twitter, and he said, I know it's creepy, but in literature, the Usher siblings by Poe, and in movies, the Corleone brothers. I use the wisdom of the Godfather every day at work. Which I find a little troubling.
What type of doctor are you? Wow. We heard from Craig101 at Craig R. McD, and he said, in comics, Iris and Jay West, or Jai West, I never know if it's a Jay or Jai, but they were the kids of Wally West and Linda Park. And he said, otherwise, the Hardy Boys.
Okay, cool. Yeah. We heard from Ange again, and this time he said, in comics, Garth and Ayla Rands.
Ah.
They're from the
Lightning
Legion,
Lass, right? And Lightning Lad. Yes.
Ah, okay. There we go.
Yeah.
Cool.
We have from Clinton Robson, our friend at Coffee and Comics blog, and he said, Wanda and Pietro Maximoff, Cyclops and Havoc, Garth and Ayla Rance, bringing back those Lightning Twins, Jade and Obsidian, and that's a good one, and my own siblings, who are also entirely fictional.
Right. We then heard from Corinne versus Nazis at Corey Marie 21 on Twitter. And Corinne said, Jason and Jaina Solo.
Ah,
so Hayden Leia's kids, but in the books.
In the books. Mm. Yeah. We heard from Rift at Rift 1821, Rifty. And he said, Astro Boy and Atlas. Ooh.
I forgot they were brothers.
Yeah.
I knew they were enemies, but. Okay. We then heard from Moby One at Shmoby One on the Twitters, and he said the Stark siblings from Winterfell have been noteworthy the last several years. That's a good call.
Somewhat, yes.
Yes.
We heard from Chris at BTO and Bat Books. He does a great podcast, Bat Books for Beginners. And he said the Blues Brothers are Bart, Lisa, and Maggie Simpson, Zan and Jaina, the Wonder Twins, Diane. Anna and Drusilla from the Wonder Woman TV show. The Blues Brothers, what a great movie.
You know, I had real trouble coming up with siblings for this answer, and then I read everyone else's response and I was like, oh, of course, those are really good.
Duh.
Another good one we had was from Too Dangerous, at Dangerous 2, otherwise known as Martin Gray. G'day, Martin. And he gave us the answer of Pietro and Wonder My Sister, of course. And then he provided us with some old art of the Maximoff twins, and Pietro's literally referring to her as Wonder My Sister.
In wow. One
breath. Yeah.
Hmm. We heard from Doug Zavisha.
Dougie.
Zavisha. And he said they didn't get much page time together, but I dig the Proud Star boys, John and James. Are they from Avengers or Fantastic Four or something?
They're more from the X-books. Yeah. I think it was. Okay. I think one of them premiered with the all-new, all-different X-Men that introduced like the more racially diverse team. But then he got killed off, and then the other one turned up, I think, in X-Force many years later.
Yeah.
But they had similar, I think, super strength powers. I think that was their shtick.
Okay. He also put in a vote for Wally West, Kids, Iris, and Jay. They were fun too. I wasn't that into them. I don't mind the idea of having kids. It's just there was a bad era for Wally West after.
Oh, okay.
When they're in the books. Oh, yeah. It's not the best run.
Right.
You know, it's one of the few Flash trades that I never bothered to buy.
Ooh.
Hmm. Okay. Anyway.
We then heard from Alan Middleton at Professor Allen, and he said Sherlock and Mycroft Holmes.
Ah, yes, from Murder, She Wrote.
Yes. I'll write those brothers, right.
Yeah. we heard from Ostrakos One, our friend Kevin, who has anagrammed his name to Ace Milk Tit whenever.
I think that's his best effort yet.
Yeah, well done. And he said, Luke and Leia, spoilers.
Oh, what?
Whoa. Yeah. Why are they kissing? Anyway.
We heard from Dean H.S. Jones at Dean H.S. Jones, or Dino, as we like to call him. And he said, Yakko, Wakko, and Dot. The Animaniacs. I love that show. They were hilarious. Oh, God.
Yeah. We heard from Ed LaTorre at Dr. Wife Quotes, and he said, the Bat Kids, they might as well be siblings, and I think they see themselves that way too. Another vote for the Bat Kids.
Mm.
Well, yeah.
Mm. Ryan Daly at Ryan Daly 01 said Luke Skywalker and Leia Organa. Again, good. Spoilers.
Yeah, it's good to see Ryan have time for a tweet, given his new parenthood status. Mm.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. Thanks.
Yeah, well done.
Appreciate the effort.
Yeah. Good job. Five words, well done. we heard from Slangword Resists, who's at Slangword on Twitter, and he said, she said, they said, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, and welcome to Slangword, to our responses.
Yeah, thanks, Slangword. And I think another new responder here, LC Comics, at LC underscore comics. And they said Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, Speed and Wiccan, Dick Grayson and Damian Wayne, brackets adoptive, Rose Wilson and Jericho. Oh, your favourite, Jericho. Ooh.
Hey, Jericho. over on the Facebook, the Book of Faces, we heard from Jared Driscoll, and he said Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch. Another vote for them.
Mm. And Keith G. Baker chimed in with Wonder Twins. And then Frank Gill gave us an animated GIF of Wonder Woman in some sort of clear tube filled with water and a bear using a saw on the tube.
I think the water is one of the Wonder Twins and the saw is... Well, doesn't one of them turn into animals and the other turns into liquids or something?
I can't recall. But it's a very... I'm guessing the twins are in there somewhere. But I can't tell which is which.
Well, there's a face in the saw. The saw.
Yeah. it's very bizarre. But thank you, Frank.
Yeah.
That cleared things up immensely.
Maybe the saw's made of ice. I don't know. J. David Wheater. Oh, another newcomer to our show. J. David Wheater said Aurora and North Star.
Ah, from Alpha Flight. Old school. Mm. And we also heard from Joe Crawford, who said the Elric Brothers.
Joe Crawford. Hi, Joe. Wow.
I'm not sure who the Elric Brothers are, I have to admit.
That's Michael Moorcock novels.
Okay, right.
Yeah. Anyway, I've never read them. I know my friend Moby is a massive fan of that stuff.
Okay. I'm sure someone will steer us right after they hear this.
And last week, if you may remember, last time, I did a heartfelt plea for an email. I even threatened to die if we didn't get one. And Rob Kelly from the Fire and Water podcast came through.
Oh.
And this is what he wrote to us. He said, "Hi guys, long-time listener, first-time emailer. I do feel guilty admitting that I only listen to portions of the show, but if it makes you feel any better, I do the same thing with a dozen or so movie podcasts I listen to. If they discuss a movie I plan to see, I'll pause the show and then get back to it once I have. And while I don't see myself chasing down these Doom Patrol comics, at least I know I have this show waiting for me if I want commentary. Back when I was a wee lad and first discovering comic shops, I tended to buy the oldest comics I could because they were such a novelty. One of the earliest books I ever bought was the last issue of the 60s Doom Patrol series. Oh. I had heard through other comics that the original team had been killed off, and I thought this was so novel that I wanted to track that issue down. And this was in the early 80s, long before reprints were available. And so while I admit I have never quite latched onto any later incarnations of the team, I do have a soft spot for them because that comic was so memorable. As to your discussion question of favourite comic siblings, hands down the answer is Sugar and Spike. I love their original comic, and against all odds, I really enjoyed their adult reboot as detectives, which ran in the Legends of Tomorrow anthology title. Anyway, thank you for reading my last response on the show. Rob Kelly.
Wow, thanks, Rob. Wow, oh, and, it means and a lot nice to choice on picking up that final 60s issue. Well done.
Classy man. Ooh. He went to the Joe Kubert school. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
Huh. Oh, you must be the only person who doesn't know that.
I will admit, I'm probably the polar opposite of Robin, that I don't listen to a lot of other podcasts. It's kind of a rare thing for me, even though I am a podcaster. There's probably lots of stuff that gets talked about amongst fellow podcasters that I have no idea what they're going on about because I've missed so many episodes of so many shows. So, there you go. Anyway, after that awkward moment, what's your answer to the question, Paul?
Okay, now in the Starman comic by James Robinson with Tony Harris, there is a family of police people. So these are the O'Dare family. So it's brothers and sisters. Their father was a cop, and all of them, in one or another, entered the police force and reached different levels, and they're all different ages. So you've got Hope and Mason and Barry and Clarence and Matt O'Dare, and they're all different, and they're all really important characters in the Starman book, and they're all fantastic. And I think they're my favourite siblings in any fictional media.
Wow. Okay. Mm. So it sounds like they're very well fleshed out and distinct characters.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They've all got stuff going on. And, yeah, they all feature all throughout the series in different degrees, but all of them are important to the story in one way or another. So
that's really cool. Yeah,
it is really cool. It's very cool. Super cool. What about you, Mike?
I honestly couldn't think of any siblings that I would consider my favourite. I really couldn't. Not even Luke and Leia. I mean, yeah, they're cool, but are they my favourite? No. So I'm going to be a little bit lazy. I'm going to steal Dino's answer and say Yakko, Wakko and Dot, just because the Animaniacs never failed to make me laugh like a loon. I loved that show. It was so funny, and the art was great, and yeah, they make me laugh. I love siblings that can make me laugh, I guess.
Wow.
So there you go.
The Animaniacs. I never took to that show. I never enjoyed that show. Maybe I was just a bit older. But,
you may have been.
I found them really irritating.
That's part of their charm, though. Oh,
well, I must be charming. That's good.
Oh, dearie me.
All right. So, I think that's the end of the mailbag. There's nothing left in the bag. So, what's coming up?
Well, next episode, at this stage, we are going to be covering issue 8 of Doom Patrol Volume 6.
Young Animal Run.
The Young Animal Run. Oh, excitement. And it's the start of the shit storyline.
Oh, yeah. Pardon
the expression.
Shit's on the shelves. What's that about?
Not a story that is shit. Yeah. Boxes of stuff on shelves.
Yeah.
Whew. And what's our question of the week for the next episode, Paul?
We have a question, which is, which comic characters have the best coloured costume?
So, costume?
What's the colouring that really appeals to you in a character? You know, who has the best colours, the best outfit in colour terms?
Ooh, interesting. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, And I was having trouble with siblings. So thanks.
No worries. My pleasure.
Anyway, we'll start signing off for now. If you want to get in touch with us, you can reach us via Wilfred on Twitter at WFDpod. You can always email us, which would please Paul immensely, at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can make contact via the Waiting for Doom Facebook page or via Doug's excellent posts on mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. And that's us for another episode.
Thanks, everyone. Have fun.
Thanks, everyone. We'll catch you all again next time for more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.